Have you ever felt that relentless pressure to, do more with less, to deliver faster, stay compliant, but or deep down you're asking yourself, are we even working on the right problem here? It's a feeling that, well, it resonates pretty widely, I think, but it was really captured perfectly by a delivery manager in the UK Civil Service. They shared this exact frustration on Slack recently.
Oh, interesting. What did they say?
Well, they asked quite pointedly, actually, have we genuinely had the time or space to test if we're solving the right problems? And they wondered if they'd sort of slip straight into delivery mode before the policy intent has been properly unpacked.
Right. That hits the nail on the head.
That sentiment, that tension between just shipping something and really understanding the why, it's a common challenge, often quite painful for civil servants right now, especially with tough budgets and that constant threat of spending reviews always looming. So, for this deep dive, our mission is to explore a methodology that seems to tackle this directly, the Clarity Lab method. We're going to focus specifically on its crucial problem space exploration phase.
Okay.
And we're asking, could this method be a practical answer for those people really struggling to meet deadlines and just operate effectively under all that pressure?
Yeah, that manager's feeling. It's not just a complaint, is it? It's like diagnostic. It points to a really critical challenge for any organization under pressure, honestly, not just the civil service. The impulse to just do something, produce the deliverables, hit the targets, it so often overrides that absolutely essential step of understanding the true nature of the challenge itself.
Right, the doing takes over the thinking.
Exactly. And the Clarity Lab method directly addresses this. It champions building a rich, nuanced understanding of the problem before anyone even thinks about rushing to solutions. It's about making sure you're pointed in the right direction from the get-go.
Which sounds crucial.
And, well, under tight budgets, that's really the only sustainable way to operate, isn't it? Making sure every bit of effort counts.
I see that clearly. But okay, for someone grappling with a tight budget, constant pressure, wouldn't there be a natural impulse to just go for the quick fix, the band-aid solution, even if it only tackles a symptom?
Oh, definitely.
How do you resist that? Especially when the initial ask might seem really direct.
Well, that impulse is understandable, completely. But it's often a false economy. When we skip that problem exploration bit, we almost invariably end up just addressing symptoms, not the underlying causes.
Like patching a leaky roof.
Exactly. Like constantly patching a leaky roof without ever checking the foundations. The civil service manager's question, whether we're working on the right things, gets right to the heart of it. If you don't fully explore the problem space, you can deliver perfectly on time, on budget, exactly to spec, only to discover you've built the wrong thing entirely, or solved a problem that wasn't really the core issue. And under budget pressure, that's not just inefficient, it's a waste of finite public resources, which, just makes future spending reviews even tougher.
Okay, so it's really about making space for the right kind of action, not just any action. For our civil service listeners, then, how does the Clarity Lab method practically help create that space? How do you even begin to ask these deeper questions when the clock is ticking so loudly?
Right. Well, the Clarity Lab method in its very first phase, which is called Explore Together, focuses entirely on this. Chapter 6 is dedicated to problem space exploration. And its whole point is to develop a rich, nuanced understanding of the challenge before you move towards solutions. It basically boils down to three core elements. First, understanding problem causality.
Causality, right.
Second, mapping the environmental interdependence, how it connects to everything else.
The context.
Exactly. And third, identifying the stakeholders and influencers, the human element. These three pillars give you the structure to make sure you're not just reacting, but truly understanding the whole landscape of your challenge.
Okay, so let's start with causality. You mentioned initiatives often just address the visible stuff, the symptoms, without touching deeper factors. How can civil servants, when they're faced with an immediate policy issue or delivery problem, actually look past that surface level and identify the real problem?
Yeah, that's where we bring in specific techniques designed to uncover root causes. We're probably all familiar with things like the five whys,
Simple but effective sometimes.
Deceptively simple, yeah. But in complex government challenges, the real skill isn't just asking why five times. It's knowing when to stop, and crucially, how to phrase those whys so you uncover systemic issues, not just, individual blame. So, for instance, if civil service deadlines are constantly being missed, the insight isn't just, oh, the teams are overloaded. It's, Why is scope creep so rampant that it leads to that overload?
Right.
And maybe even why isn't there dedicated time built in for that upfront unpacking and challenge, which allows the scope creep to take hold in the first place? You see, it shifts you from thinking it's just a resource problem
to maybe a process or policy clarity problem.
Precisely. Another incredibly powerful tool is using causal loop diagrams.
Okay. What are those?
They're visual maps, essentially. Mm-hmm. But their real power lies in showing up feedback loops. The key insight here is that many problems aren't linear. A leads to B leads to C. They're often self-reinforcing cycles.
Okay, like a vicious circle.
Exactly. Think of a civil service team under constant delivery pressure. That pressure might reduce the quality of their meetings, right? Mm-hmm. Which leads to misunderstandings.
Yeah.
Which creates rework, which then adds even more time pressure.
Ah, I see the loop.
Yeah. And the profound takeaway there is you can't fix that just by adding more meetings or resources. You have to identify and actually break the loop itself to get sustainable change.
That's insightful. It shows the solution isn't always the obvious direct thing.
Not at all.
You mentioned earlier those recurring problems, maybe some emotional intensity around an issue. It makes me think of our civil service manager again, you know, feeling caught in that relentless delivery mode.
Yeah.
When that clock is ticking so loudly, how do you know if you're still just looking at symptoms and not the real root cause?
That's a great question. There are definitely patterns that can signal you haven't gone deep enough. First, recurring problems. If the same issues keep popping up again and again, despite your solutions, you're almost certainly treating symptoms.
Right. The problem never really goes away.
Exactly. Then there's emotional intensity. If reactions seem disproportionate to the stated issue, like, say, constant staff morale problems despite efforts to boost out depth, it often points to deeper unaddressed concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And crucially, resistance to seemingly logical solutions. This is a big one. If people are pushing back against approaches that should theoretically work, it usually means you've misidentified the problem they're actually experiencing. There's likely an unstated deeper concern driving that resistance. For civil servants, these patterns could look like, you know, those endless project delays, that constant firefighting from one crisis to the next, or teams just expressing burnout without a clear single trigger.
So if you recognize those patterns in your own work and you're feeling that immense pressure to just deliver something, what are some practical first steps? How can you start asking these deeper questions?
Well, you start with structured exercises.
Mm-hmm.
Even small ones can make a big difference in developing that deeper understanding. Problem reframing is really powerful.
How does that work?
Instead of just accepting the initial framing, like how might we meet this budget target, which often leads straight to reactive cuts, right?
Yeah, slash and burn.
You could consciously reframe it. Maybe is, how might we streamline this process more effectively to deliver the same public value with fewer resources? Or perhaps, how might we redefine the scope of this policy so it's achievable within current constraints without compromising critical public service?
Wow, okay. Each framing opens up totally different solution paths.
Completely different. And another one is perspective taking. This is critical in government. How would a citizen actually receiving this service see this problem? What about a frontline service provider or even a colleague in a different ministerial department?
Getting outside your own bubble.
Exactly. Looking at it from multiple angles often reveals blind spots and hidden needs you just wouldn't see otherwise.
Yeah.
And these aren't huge time-consuming things. They can be quick, focused exercises that bring immediate clarity.
That makes sense. And it leads nicely into the next element, doesn't it? Because, as you said, no problem exists in isolation. Every challenge, especially in government, is tangled up in this complex web of environmental factors. So for our civil service audience, what tools help understand this surrounding web, particularly with those ever-present budget pressures in mind?
Absolutely. The context is everything. We use approaches like PESL analysis to systematically map out those external forces. And it's not just a tick box exercise. It's about making sure your strategy, your solution, is actually grounded in reality.
Right. PESL. Political economic.
That's it. So for a civil servant, you'd consider political factors, things like government policies, maybe electoral cycles, which can dramatically shift priorities overnight,
mm-hmm.
economic factors, departmental budgets, spending reviews, inflation, basically, the financial landscape you're operating in.
Okay.
Social factors, changing public attitudes, demographic shifts, which directly impact service needs, technological new tech advancements, opening possibilities, or maybe creating digital skills gaps, legal lands, the regulatory frameworks, setting non-negotiable boundaries. And environmental concerns, sustainability, climate change impacts, which are now a critical lens for pretty much all policy, right?
Definitely.
So PESL ensures you're not just planning in a vacuum, you're adapting to those external realities.
And seeing how they might constrain you or maybe offer opportunities.
Precisely. Which leads nicely to another really useful tool, constraint mapping. This helps civil servants differentiate between what they must accept and what they can potentially influence.
Okay, how does that work?
You categorize constraints. Are they hard constraints? Things like immutable deadlines set by legislation, or maybe legally binding agreements, things you just can't change.
Set in stone.
Right. Then there are soft constraints, maybe internal policies, current resource allocations, ways of working that could potentially be modified if you build a strong enough case.
Things with wiggle room.
A bit, yeah. And finally, there are self-imposed constraints. These are often cultural norms, traditional approaches within a department, maybe comfort zones that might actually no longer serve the public good effectively.
Ah, we've always done it this way trap.
Exactly that trap. Identifying these different types is vital under budget pressure. It helps you focus your limited energy where it can actually make a difference instead of, you know, banging your head against immovable objects.
That's fascinating. It makes me wonder, though, how does the context itself shape the problem? Beyond just listing these external factors, it feels like there's a deeper interplay happening.
There absolutely is. It's not just about the list. It's understanding how these elements interact to define the very nature of the challenge you're facing. Boundary examination is really key here.
Boundary examination.
Yeah, asking, where do we actually draw the line around this problem? Is a delivery problem really confined to just one team? Or does it actually stem from the initial policy design, or maybe interdepartmental handoffs, or even political expectations that were set way too early without understanding the complexities?
Right. So expanding the boundary might reveal different causes.
Or different leverage points for solutions.
Yeah.
Sometimes the problem you think you have is just a symptom of a much larger systemic issue that sits outside your immediate team or department's boundary.
That's a powerful idea. So what's a practical way to maybe visualize all of this, to make those complex contextual influences a bit more tangible?
Force field analysis is excellent for understanding the dynamics of change within a specific context. Let's say a government department is trying to adopt new, more efficient work practices because of budget cuts.
Okay, a common scenario.
Right. So you'd identify the forces pushing for that change. Maybe the potential efficiency gains, the cost savings, perhaps strong ministerial backing. And then you identify the forces resisting it. Things like comfort with the old ways, maybe the perceived short-term costs of training or a lack of necessary staff skills, perhaps even union resistance.
So the pros and cons, essentially, but more dynamic.
Kind of. But it shows the forces at play. It gives you this dynamic visual understanding of why change might be stalled or difficult.
Yeah.
And crucially, it helps you figure out where to apply effort for maximum impact. Do you strengthen the driving forces or weaken the restraining ones?
Okay, so we've looked at the what of the problem with causality and the where with the environment. But as that civil service manager knows all too well, every policy, every project, it lives or dies within a web of human relationships and influences, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
From the minister's initial vision down to the citizen's actual experience and all the internal team dynamics in between, who is shaping this challenge and who's being shaped by it? That's the human element, right?
That's exactly right. And stakeholder mapping is really foundational here. You start by listing all the individuals and groups who are affected by or could influence the situation.
So ministers, departmental heads, project teams.
Yep. Citizens, maybe specific community groups, even contractors or suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
Then you analyze them. What's their level of interest? How much influence do they actually have? What's the potential impact on them? And importantly, what's their current attitude? Are they generally supportive, neutral, or actively resistant?
That sounds essential for government work.
It's absolutely essential, especially when budget cuts might mean you simply can't engage with everyone equally. It helps you prioritize your communication, your engagement, your collaboration efforts much more effectively. Focus where it counts.
Okay. And how do you get beyond just listing them? How do you understand their perspectives?
Well, building on that, empathy mapping is a fantastic tool for exploring stakeholders' experiences in real depth. Let's say you want to understand why there's resistance to a new digital process being rolled out. You try to map what those concerned civil servants are actually hearing from their peers, what barriers they see day to day, what they might be thinking but maybe aren't saying in official meetings, and crucially, how they feel about it all. perhaps frustrated, overwhelmed, maybe even cynical based on past experiences.
Getting inside their heads a bit.
Exactly. It helps you move past just their surface-level stated positions and start to address the real human concerns, the anxieties, the hopes that often underpin resistance or support. It's about building solutions that actually resonate with people.
That really raises a crucial point about navigating the, let's face it, often political landscape within government. Understanding who holds the power and how they tend to use it seems incredibly important for getting anything done for policy or project success.
It is absolutely crucial, and that's where power source analysis comes in. It helps you identify the different types of power that are at play in any given situation.
Different types, like what?
Well, there's formal authority.
Yeah.
You know, someone's official position, like a minister's statutory role. There's control over resources, budgets, staff, access to critical information. There's power derived from network connections, who knows whom. And then there's personal influence, charisma, expertise, reputation.
Okay, I see. It's not just about the org chart.
Not at all. Understanding which type of power a particular stakeholder holds helps you tailor your engagement strategy much more effectively. For example, you might approach someone with formal authority using data and clear policy arguments.
Right.
Whereas an informal opinion leader, someone respected within a team maybe, might require a much more collaborative, trust-building approach over coffee. It's vital for navigating those complex government hierarchies and making sure decisions actually move forward, especially when things are contentious. So ultimately, these three dimensions we've talked about, the causality, the environment, and the stakeholders, they aren't separate silos. They have to be integrated for problem exploration to be truly effective. It's not about doing them in isolation, but really seeing their interplay.
How does that work in practice? How do you bring it all together?
Well, imagine, for instance, that situation we discussed. A civil service team consistently missing project deadlines. A causal loop diagram might reveal that internal process issue, right? The time pressure leading to poor communication, mm-hmm. causing rework, which then just exacerbates the time pressure.
Vicious cycle, yeah.
Simultaneously, maybe your PESTEL analysis identified new political priorities coming out of a recent spending review.
Oh.
That adds significant external pressure and fundamentally changes what successful delivery even means for that team.
Okay, context shift.
And then perhaps your empathy mapping showed that key stakeholders, let's say a specific directorate head, are resistant to proposed process changes. Not because they're difficult, but maybe because of negative experiences with past initiatives or genuine concerns about how resources might be shifted away from their area.
Right, seeing the whole picture.
Exactly. Bringing all those insights together, maybe in an integration workshop, allows the team to move beyond just identifying these separate problems. They can synthesize the findings into a coherent narrative. And that leads to a much more nuanced, much more powerful problem framing statement.
So not just, we need to meet deadlines.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
The integrated statement might become something like, we need to redesign our cross-functional project delivery process to better align with evolving political priorities and tighter resource constraints.
Okay.
Addressing legacy trust issues and perceived resource inequities among key directorates.
Ah, bringing in the stakeholder piece.
To enable timely and effective policy implementation that delivers demonstrable value for citizens within the new financial reality. As you see, that kind of integrated framing changes everything about how you approach solutions. Because now you're tackling the whole ecosystem, not just tinkering with isolated parts.
So all these sophisticated tools and frameworks we've been discussing, the five whys, PESTEL, empathy mapping, the true power, I guess, comes when they actually translate from, you know, theory on a whiteboard into tangible, sustainable change on the ground. This isn't just academic, is it? It's about the real work that leads to meaningful and sustainable change.
Exactly right. That's the entire point. Thorough problem space exploration is the foundation of clarity. It is not a delay. It's not a nice to have if you've got time. It is arguably the most important work you can do at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
By investing this time up front, you dramatically increase the likelihood that you're addressing the real underlying issues. You develop approaches that actually stand a chance of working within the messy contextual realities. And you engage effectively with all the human systems involved. It's fundamentally about being effective, not just being busy.
And that effectiveness.
That effectiveness directly translates to better public value, better outcomes, even under the most challenging budget constraints imaginable.
So connecting this right back to our civil service delivery manager and their dilemma at the start, investing this upfront time, using these Clarity Lab approaches to really explore the problem space, It could actually be the shortcut, couldn't it? The shortcut to meeting deadlines, operating effectively under tough budgets, and successfully navigating those spending reviews.
Paradoxically, yes. Slowing down to speed up effectively.
Not by rushing faster into delivery mode, but by ensuring they are solving the right problems in the first place, with solutions that are genuinely fit for purpose within the whole system.
Precisely. Getting it right, or at least righter, the first time.
So here's a final thought for you listening. What if the biggest challenge isn't really doing more with less, but perhaps it's about doing less of the wrong things by first understanding what truly matters?
That's a good way to put it.
Maybe consider how applying even one of these techniques we've talked about, maybe just trying problem reframing or sketching out a quick stakeholder map, how could that fundamentally shift your approach to your next big project or policy challenge? It might just lead to some real clarity and ultimately much more tangible impact.